bring me back in shackles. Hang me long out in the sun. Exonerate me and forget about me.
We were fortunate in Montreal. We got the Foley Completely tour. That's the last time they played the Bell Centre. It was in February 2015. I was there with John Bartlett. There's a bit of a backstory to that, which I'll share with you before 7. And they came out with the anniversary album, 20-year anniversary of Foley Completely, which included a very special bonus disc live at the Horseshoe Tavern in 1997.
Yeah, it's so spectacular. And having been lucky enough to see the Hip at the Horseshoe Tavern, Gord Downie, it doesn't look like it. I was going to say it doesn't look like it today. Didn't look like it, but he had an immense head of hair that was literally flopping around. It was part of his stage show. Like, that's how he and he sweat so much that when he would shake his head from side to side, literally the first couple rows of fans would get drenched at the Horseshoe Tavern in sweat.
Everybody sweated at the Horseshoe. They still do. Here comes our favorite Wednesday afternoon contributor who joins us at 6:05.
Gord Miller on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Poker Palace, just 15 minutes from downtown Montreal. Poker-palace.ca.
Hello there, Gord Miller.
Hello, Mitch Melnick. How are you?
I'm good. It's a tough day, as you know. It's tough. The whole country needs a hug today, I think.
I think it's sad, but you know, I think it's also a reminder of how great someone was. And I think Bob McKenzie said it best. I was emailing him the other day, and Bob said, you know, very few people leave a legacy like that.
Well, when you see the Prime Minister of Canada tearing up in extending his condolences, and you know, there were people, and we talked about this at the top of the show. We'll get to the Habs in a second, but yeah, Rod was very, very emotional to start the show. And, you know, it was such a beautiful way to go out, that final concert in Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how close the issue of Aboriginals is to Gord Downie. He had the ear of the most powerful man in the country, and he was going to take advantage of it. There were some people who were ultra cynical and didn't think it belonged in that setting. It was his last stand. He earned the right.
And he moved the needle.
He sure did. That's the whole point, isn't it?
So at the end of his life, to the end of his life, he moved the needle, and that's great. He was an amazing. I didn't know him as well as, you know, Bobby Mack and some of the other guys, but I knew him a little bit, and he was a wonderful guy. He used to text me once in a while during the World Junior and ask me about Bruins prospects. And the last text I got from him was during last year's World Junior, asking about Charlie McAvoy, and said, you know, is he the answer to the Bruins' problems? I said, well, they have a lot of problems. He's an answer to some of them. And he just said, oh, thanks. Hope things are well with your family. Peace. That was the last thing I got from him.
And again, for those who might not be aware of the Bruins connection.
Yeah, major Bruins connection. Harry Sinden, Gord Downie's father-in-law.
There you go.
No, godfather.
A godfather, yes, sorry.
Godfather, yeah. I'll tell you a quick story, a funny story about that. Bill O'Reilly is a great friend of mine. He's Terry O'Reilly's brother. And one day, Bill was down visiting Terry. They were in the alumni suite in Boston, and Gord Downie was there. So we're all talking, and Bill mentioned that whenever I do a Bruins game in Boston, we frame it, my on camera, so that Terry's number is over my shoulder to say hi to Bill.
Huh.
It's a little thing, which is true. We do that.
That's great.
And I was doing a Bruins game against I think it was against Montreal, actually. And Gord sent me a text after my on-camera said, oh my God, it's true, you do that. That is so great. And he was just so blown away that we could sort of do that to say hi to a friend at home. And so whenever I did a Bruins game in Boston, quite often Gord would send me a text, you know, saying, hey, you did it again.
Thornton wins it. Picked up by Heat. Fires it off a body in front. Tipped. It's loose. They score. Couture with another. And it's 4-2. San Jose.
All right, Gord. I know you were looking forward to this because you tweeted about it right after the game. So
yeah.
What did you see that you would like to share with us?
Well, I'm still clinging to this life raft of bad bounces, and their shooting percentage will improve. But I have to admit, I'm looking for a lifeboat. I'm looking for a new lifeboat. I mean, they're not going to shoot 4% the rest of the year. If they shot the league average, they'd have, I think it's 4.5 more goals, or 5 more goals. So I don't think they'll shoot like this all year. Last night, there was a, you know, you had a puck go off, what, three legs and go in, off the end boards on a guy's stick, off a leg right in a guy's stick. But the bottom line is, you know, they're not scoring. And people thought they would struggle to score. And it's got to improve. And to be honest with you, you know, it's the guys they have that are the problem. It's not the guys they lost. It's the guys they have.
Well, that's an interesting flip here of people who are still bemoaning, and to the credit of many of them who believed it would be an issue, more so than I believed it would be an issue this season, they are highlighting that as the losses pile up. So I want you to go further on what your spin is here.
Well, I just, you know, they're among the league leaders, if not the league leaders, in shots on goal per game, right? I don't know what more you... I mean, if they were averaging 21 shots a game, you could say, okay, I hear what you're saying. You know, they're not generating enough puck movement. They're not getting enough time in the offensive zone. But they're not. They're getting lots of shots. They're getting lots of scoring chances. They're just not connecting. That, to me, is not missing Andrei Markov. That is not, you know, missing... signing another defenseman. Montreal's fourth in the league in shots per game. They're 36.5 shots. That should equate to roughly the average NHL team scores on 9% of its shots. They should be scoring 3.5 goals a game. But they're not. So, I mean, you can say what they should be doing. They're not. They're scoring a goal and a half a game.
And they're not getting saves at the level that they're used to getting.
So if you think Carey Price will get it back to 915, 920 by the end of the year, and if you think they'll shoot 9% by the end of the year, then they're a team in the mix for a playoff spot. But he's not, they're not, and they're not. And sooner or later, you are what the standings say you are. And I just don't know. I mean, they need more from Pacioretty. They need more from Galchenyuk. They need more from Gallagher. You know, Drouin's been okay, I think. Would you agree? He's been
He's you know, he's doing his part, is how I'd put it. He's doing his part while trying to learn a new position.
Yeah, I think he's been pretty good. I wouldn't say he's part of the problem. But let's be honest. I mean, you're probably thinking that between them, Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, and Gallagher are going to score, what, 85 goals this year? You'd probably put the three of them down, you know, put Pacioretty down for 35, put Galchenyuk down for, I don't know, 20, 25, put Gallagher down for 15 to 20, right? That's what you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's, that's less than 80, though.
Okay, that's not, okay.
Just you were doing some math on the fly there. I'm trying to play along here, that's all.
35, 25 is 60.
Yeah. No, you're right. And Gallagher, I figured Gallagher would return, 20, if healthy, to 20. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, so 75 to 80 goals. Right. Well, they're not even close to that.
All right, so here's what I thought very early on in the game. I think it was the first shift. Gallagher was alone in the high slot. The puck came to him, perfect feed. I think it was Plekanec. He blasted a shot. It was the middle of the net. It was right in the chest of Martin Jones. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, kind of highlighted something. I don't know. It just made me think, okay, Brendan Gallagher is not a natural goal scorer. A guy like Drouin or Pacioretty or Galchenyuk, they might have buried that, right? And is it possible, I hate to be over-dramatic about this, but is it possible that there is now, with the new rules and such an emphasis on speed and skill, that the gritty little gutsy guys who have to work so hard, and it's even harder now than it already was for those guys to score goals?
I would think it would be easier just because you don't get slashed in front of the net. It's easier to establish position. I mean, I still see guys, you know, banging away, getting ugly goals. It's funny because when you look at it, I mean, they're generating lots of chances. Don't you think?
Yeah, but a lot of it is like that shot. That's not, if you're an average National Hockey League goaltender, you see the puck, you're going to make the save. That like they did a lot of that in the third period against Toronto the other night. They blasted pucks right at Anderson.
Yeah, what they're not getting is in. They're not getting inside.
That's right.
Or as Mike Babcock would say, inside the game. Like, they're not getting, you know, inside a guy's shoulder, driving to the net, that kind of thing. That's what they're not getting. But, it's funny because I don't see their defense as being the problem. I don't see, like, they seem to move the puck up the ice okay. They seem to get possession.
They allowed 2 goals, 5-on-5 in San Jose last night. I agree with you. A lot of people are pointing because they look so bad as a team, and people are pointing at everything as being terrible. I think the defense has actually looked better the last couple of games.
I will tell you this. I was in Washington last night. They miss Carl Alsner. They miss Kevin Shattenkirk to a lesser extent, and they miss Nate Schmidt. Their defense has been hollowed out.
Well, like, and they just lost Niskanen, right?
Yeah, so they can't get shots on goal. Now, they're shooting at a crazy rate. Like, they're shooting like 13% or something. Like, that'll come down, but they're, you know, Washington's averaging like 10 shots a game less than Montreal is.
So Gallo, you know, Gallo normally worries a lot. You know,
how's that panic button doing?
He thought they'd win last night and break the 20-year streak in regulation time. But
why would you think that?
Because I always would bet against the streak. Just like Gord on Saturday night going into that Leaf game. Everyone kept talking about the fact that the Canadians had beaten the Leafs 14 times in a row. I said, I'm going to keep saying that the Leafs are going to win until they win, because it's not going to go on forever and ever and
Mitch,
ever.
Mitch, I'm going to teach you something about gambling, okay? Do you gamble?
Not much, no.
Okay, I'm going to teach you something about gambling. There's an old expression, never bet against a streak, because you will be right eventually, but you'll go broke doing it.
And that's why I don't gamble. Unless it's coffee.
Never bet against a streak. Yeah.
So, sage advice, but you're clearly not taking it.
No, they're going to win tonight in L.A.
But I don't think he really believes it. He just wants to be able to come on tomorrow and say, see, I told you they'd win in L.A.
He wants to be a contrarian. Yeah, well, there's a lot of that going around these days.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I find in hockey, when it looks like in a regular season game, all the reasons point to one team winning. Like tonight, it would be the Kings. They're the best team in the NHL. Habs are stuck in a back-to-back. Canadians are playing Montoya in goal. When all these things seem to be stacked up against a specific team in a regular season game, usually it goes the other way, and the team you don't expect to win wins.
No, it doesn't, actually. Teams playing back-to-back lose about against rested team lose about 75% of the time.
I wasn't specifically mentioning the back-to-back thing.
That's an important
factor. I was just saying when everything looks stacked against the team.
Teams coming off a road trip of three or longer outside of the time zone, more often than not, lose that first game home. Ottawa did last night. There are certain trends in gambling that you would be foolish to ignore.
I'm going with the Kings tonight. I'm going with the Canadians tonight.
You're going. Well, make up your damn mind.
No, I'm going with the Canadians. I'm going with the Canadians
going with
tonight.
The Habs
tonight.
Well, are you proposing a wager here?
Well, you got to do like Aaron Rand then and give me some kind of spread or something.
No. Gord only goes high end here when it comes to it's like dinner at Moishe's, which I had to pay off.
Yeah. Well, our three pay scales are different, I think.
You'd be right about that. not to hijack. Is there more you want to talk about the Montreal Canadiens?
Yes, I do. I think Rod would like to ask you a question about the Habs. Absolutely. While we're on it, and then we'll move on to something else briefly.
Yes.
Not really.
Oh.
But if I were to ask something about the Habs. Okay. A player that intrigues me with the New York Islanders. Bergeron has attended a couple Islanders games in the last couple weeks. Brock Nelson. Do you think... Is he more than a 20-goal scorer last year of his contract? Could he help the Canadiens?
Gord, their centermen are Phil Deneau, Thomas Pekanic, and Torrey Mitchell behind Jonathan Drouin.
Yeah. I'm not sure he would probably be an upgrade on what they have. What are you giving up to get him? I don't know that Brock Nelson is the answer to what they need. I'm not sure how creative he is.
So he's more of a straight line.
Okay. I'm not sure. I don't know that you're out making a trade right now. I think what you have has to be better.
So when Claude Julien says, as he did last night, we're as frustrated as the fans. We're working to find solutions. It's from within. Right,
it's got to come from within because you know, like I don't care who they add. If Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, and Gallagher don't score, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and go ahead.
I mean, to be honest, and if Price isn't stopping pucks at a higher rate, they're not going anywhere. So I mean, you can shuffle everything behind them all you want, but you're in on Pacioretty, Gallagher, and Galchenyuk, and Price. Obviously, that you'll go as far as they take you. I mean, you know.
How about putting the three of those guys together? Galchenyuk between Gallagher and Pacioretty. See if that works. Come on. What do you got to lose?
I thought we weren't talking about Galchenyuk.
I know. It just hit me. And whenever
just,
I'm on with
you, just did that again.
Whenever you're on with me, I just blurt things out loud that I'm thinking. I don't self-edit. You have this effect on me.
I have that effect on a lot of people.
Gallo was going to jump in here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is, so since the Canadiens are 1-4-1, everyone keeps saying it's early in the season. It's only six games in. It's only seven games in. How long can you flutter out of the gate before it actually is too big a hurdle to overcome when you're looking at the percentages of how many games you have to win per month to make the playoffs?
Unless you're like Ottawa a few years ago with the hamburger thing.
Yeah, Nashville last year got off to a tough start. They had a lot of road games. They had a lot of playoff teams early in their schedule. They got off to a tough start last year, made the playoffs, and went to the final. I would say 20 games.
Yeah. So that basically takes you to the American Thanksgiving, right?
Thanksgiving, yeah.
That's it. Yeah. All right, is there as much, I know you still have friends out there, is there as much concern in Edmonton as there is here?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think the expectation's so high there, and I think it's not just that they're losing, it's the way they're losing. I mean, they got dominated at home the last couple of games. They got dominated by Carolina. They got dominated by Ottawa. Like, they have played very poorly. And, my concern for Edmonton would be, I think that window's closing pretty fast because bodies have to go over the side here next year when the McDavid extension kicks in.
Right.
They got to pay him $11 million more than they're paying him right now.
And assuming
he cashes his bonuses, they'll likely be over the cap at the end of the year.
And that's one thing that we discussed prior to the start of the season when you're looking at these terrific-looking young teams on paper and on the ice is they have to stay away from significant injury. Draisaitl's already on the injured reserve list.
Yeah, you know, Andre Sequeira is a big loss to them and an underrated player who was a huge loss to them. Doesn't get, you know, you probably don't see him a lot, doesn't get talked about a lot, but taking him out of their defense really hurt them. But they're the same thing. They're shooting like 3.5%. Like, they've got a whole whack of guys who are piling shots on goal and not scoring. You know, McDavid hasn't scored since opening night, since he had the hat trick against Calgary. So.
You a Yankee fan or a... Or a Cubs fan?
I am a Yankee fan. I was a Cubs fan for a long time, and I kind of got off it. For the longest time, they were kind of a tourist attraction, not a baseball team, and I kind of lost interest in them because it didn't seem like they cared. But I'm glad that they won last year. I've always had a soft spot for the Yankees. The Expos, you know, were my team growing up. So, a bit of a Yankee fan. It was funny. So I just wanted to get, because I responded to something that Jack Todd said last night, and I just wanted to sort of say that, first of all, Jack and I have had our differences over the years, but there are things he says that I agree with and things that I don't agree with. There's been a lot of talk about Austin Matthews, and you know, he mentioned that he has no personality, and I've been talking about this a lot today. I just find it amazing that, like, a guy like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby or Matthews are expected to be someone that they are essentially not. You know, they're supposed to be these sort of, you know, say outrageous things, do outrageous things. And I was thinking about that because, you know, when you play in big markets, you obviously get a lot of exposure. And when you play in Houston and places like that, you don't. And people complain about it. But I'm not sure why we expect our prominent athletes to all have these outrageous personalities. And it's been a long conversation today, and I was wondering what you think about it.
Well, I noticed you and Greg Wojcinski, formerly Puck Daddy, were also going at it a little bit on Twitter, right? About the same.
Well, I just said, you know, but I mean, he says, I want some personality from those guys. They have personality, but they just choose not to show it in public a lot. And I don't blame them. I mean, I'm not feeling sorry for professional athletes, but if everywhere you go, your picture's being taken, if every word you say, ask Sidney Crosby about the White House.
Right.
I mean, and what he went through with that, he went to the White House.
Which was not his call.
Wasn't his decision.
Yeah.
You know, so he's expected to what? You know, suddenly, I just find it amazing that, and then when P.K. Subban does it, people rip him. Like, I love P.K.'s personality, and that's who he is. It's not a front. P.K.'s not playing somebody. That's who he is.
That's right.
And that's what we love about
and,
him. Right?
And that's what some people don't like about him.
Right.
And that's what some people think. And some people think it's an act. It's not an act. It's just like Gary Carter.